In the pages of the Bible, we are introduced to several young people who stood on their faith in God and obeyed him. Joseph, as you know, is one of my favorites that we have talked about in the past. But today, I want to talk about another young man who is also involved with one of the world's greatest empires. We know that Joseph was taken to Egypt, sold by his brothers as a slave, and he came into Egypt in that position. He was brought to prominence by the fact that he could interpret dreams. In a similar way, Daniel, who we're going to be talking about today, was taken from Jerusalem to Babylon, to the city of Babel, as a slave. And he came to prominence also because of his ability to interpret dreams. They were put in the position, I believe, by God. Joseph was in a position to save his people and save really the modern world of his day. Daniel was placed in a position to really bring favor to the people that had been brought to Babylon, to the Jewish people that were in that city. The background of this occurrence was that God had hoped. He had hoped that the fact that Israel, the northern kingdom, had been taken by the Assyrians would have woken up the Jewish kingdom to the fact that God would punish, that he would bring about the prophecies that he had sent, the prophets' words would come to pass. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 3. Jeremiah chapter 3, and we'll read about this. Jeremiah would have been known to Daniel, was a contemporary of him, as well as Ezekiel. So Jeremiah probably may have heard some of the words Daniel may have heard some of the words from Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 3 and verse 10. God, in the beginning of this, is talking about the treachery, the punishment that was brought upon Israel. And in verse 10, he says, "And yet for all of this, her treacherous sister Judah has not turned to me with her whole heart, but in pretense, says the Lord. Then the Lord said to me, 'Backsliding Israel has shown herself more righteous than treacherous Judah.'" So God basically said, Judah has made a show. They've made a pretense of turning to me, but it's not real. And to him, that was worse than just the outright rebellion that Israel had shown. Let's go to Jeremiah 16. Jeremiah 16, another passage where God talks about this. Jeremiah 16 and verse 9. "For thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will cause to cease from this place, before your eyes and in your days, the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, the voice of the bride. And it shall be, when you show this people all these words, and they say to you, 'Why has the Lord pronounced all this great disaster against us? Or what is our iniquity? Or what is our sin that we have committed against the Lord our God?'" See, they're like, "Why are you doing this? We haven't done anything wrong." They were unable to see their own sin. In verse 11, "Then you shall say to them, 'Because your fathers have forsaken me, says the Lord, they have walked after other gods, have served them and worshiped them, and have forsaken me and not kept my law. And you have done worse than your fathers. For behold, each one follows the dictates of his own evil heart, so that no one listens to me. Therefore, I will cast you out of this land into a land that you do not know, neither you nor your fathers. And there you shall serve other gods day and night, where I will not show you favor." So God basically told them, "You're going to be taken away. You're going to be brought to another country as slaves. And there you'll serve other gods. in a pagan society. Daniel lived to see these words fulfilled. They happened within his lifetime. Let's go to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. We'll begin in verse 1. Here, the words that God gave to Jeremiah came to pass. Partially. This was the first of three times that Nebuchadnezzar carried people away from Jerusalem. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Notice who did this. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. In a sense, Nebuchadnezzar is, you know, doing a little one-upmanship here. So he says, my God is bigger than your God. My God's stronger than yours. I've taken stuff out of the temple in Jerusalem, and I put it in my God's house. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles. Most people feel that Daniel was approximately 15 when he was taken, which would have meant that he probably grew up in the time of some of the reforms of King Josiah, the king who was considered a righteous king, who put back some of the practices and worship that his great-grandfather David, I mean, we're going way back, but he is lauded as a righteous king who was unexpectedly killed when he went up to fight Pharaoh, who was going to the aid of Babylon. So he was taken along with some others. We know that in the book of Daniel, we're actually introduced to not only him, but three of his companions. Many say that the trip from Jerusalem to Babylon was a 900-mile walk. So just imagine you're taken, and they feel that it was summer, that it was probably July, that these people were taken from Jerusalem. They were bound, their hands were bound, I'm sure, and they were forced to walk 900 miles to Babylon. Quite a test. I guess by the time they made it to Babylon, they at least knew who the healthy ones were, right? Well, these people have not died on the trip, so they must be in pretty good shape. And then I could imagine the thoughts in Daniel and his companions' minds as they saw for the first time the city of Babel. They say that the wall around the city was considered one of the seven wonders of the world. 300 feet tall. Imagine that, 30 stories. The wall had been dug down 35 feet into the ground, so total height was 335 feet. Wide enough to drive a four-horse chariot down. That was the first, probably one of the first things Daniel saw of his new home, that incredible wall, 56 miles long, wrapped around, I think they say, about 200 square miles of the city of Babel. And in the backdrop of that wall, a 650-foot-high ziggurat, or pillar, temple, built to one of the gods of Babylon, covered with enamel, so it imagined that it kind of shone when the sun reflected on it as a beacon. They probably saw that in reality before they saw the wall. They probably saw that pillar as they were coming upon the city. So let's continue on. In verse 4 of Daniel 1, we're told about the attributes of some of these men that were taken. Young men in whom there was no blemish, but good looking. I guess I couldn't have made the cut. Sorry. Gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And to them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. And all these names are referring to gods of Babylon, to their gods. So they basically began to try to inculcate and indoctrinate these young men by changing their names. Perhaps they saw this as a way. Now, one of the things they pointed out about their practice of bringing young men like this to serve in the highest echelons of their society was that they felt that they were safer to bring a foreign person in and give them some training than they might be from somebody who's from one of the families within Babylon that might have nefarious purposes against the ruler, against the current ruler. Bringing somebody from another land removes all of that. They have no built-in family ties. They have no built-in societal loyalties necessarily. They're, in a sense, more neutral. Although I'd imagine they might have some resentment toward what they were, toward the environment they were forced to serve in. Another thing that many commentaries and many writers that I looked at for this message, many feel that it's, you have a maybe greater than 50% chance that all four of these young men were made eunuchs as part of the process of preparing them for this role. That then it would be even more likely that they would not be distracted, they would be focused on their education, on their training. And like I said, it's a, if you read, you have 50-50, you might find someone who says yes, others say no. But it's interesting to note that later in his life, when Daniel was brought to the lion's den, they didn't bring any family with him. And after he survived that ordeal, the men that accused him were put in with their families. They were thrown into the den with their wives and children, which I would imagine if Daniel had them, they may have most likely brought them as well. So maybe Daniel was not able to have a family. Interesting also to note the words that Jeremiah, the letter that Jeremiah ended up writing to the captives in Babel, is telling them, you're not going to be coming back right away. So settle down, get married, build your houses, even told them pray for the people that are ruling the country so that you could have favor in their eyes. So I would imagine that if Daniel had the ability, why wouldn't he have also done that, had a family? Just something to consider. As I said, we're not told, it's not clear whether he was or not. But we do have this prophecy to consider. Let's look at Isaiah 39 and verse 5. Isaiah 39 and verse 5. And if you want to write this down, the parallel verse for this is 2 Kings 20, 17 to 18. Isaiah 39, verse 5. Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord of hosts. Behold, the days are coming. And this is after Hezekiah had shown friendliness toward envoys that had come from Babel, shown them, taken them on a tour of the temple, showed them all the gold and everything that was there. Isaiah says this, behold, the days are coming when all that is in your house and what your fathers have accumulated until this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord. They shall take away some of your sons who will descend from you, whom you will beget, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. So possibly Daniel and his three friends were eunuchs. Now let's drop down to verse 8 of chapter 1. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel, at the ripe old age of 15 years old, made a decision to obey God. And I would imagine he probably thought about that, I'm sure, as he was walking those 900 miles. I'm sure he had time to think of what he was going to do when he got to Babel. Here he is in, I would think, would be stressful circumstances, far from home, in a strange land, strange customs, new language, many stresses and strains. And yet, he had resolved that he would not defile himself. Part of this, many feel, is because some of the things that were being brought to them had been offered to gods, specifically the wine. The wine would have been part of maybe an offering that had been poured out. Some wine had been poured out to one of their pagan gods, and then the rest of it was consumed by the king and his table. The food, who knows? I mean, you didn't know for sure what kind of meat you might have been getting. So some of it could have been lamb, beef, but a lot of it could have been pork and other things. So Daniel wanted to guard against that. And now God, verse 9, notice who did this. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. Why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. Notice the kind of administration that Babylon has. You make a wrong step, and your head may not be attached anymore. Got to be really careful. Got to make sure you're doing your job, or else there ain't no retirement. You don't retire. Verse 11, and so Daniel said to the steward, and this apparently is another gentleman who worked for the chief of the eunuchs. Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. So make a comparison. Let's do a randomized controlled trial, right, as we like to call them nowadays. You feed us the vegetables. All the rest of them you can give the stuff from the king's table. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. Interesting to note, and this is not really part of the message, but my wife has been eating carnivore now for almost 3 weeks. So almost the opposite has really helped her. And I'm not a health professional, so don't take this as any kind of advice to anyone else, but it's working for Kathy. So the opposite has been helping her, but here they were given vegetables and water. In verse 17, as for these four young men, again, we see God's hand. God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, this is 3 years, right? So this is after 3 years of training. The chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. So at this point, they would have been approximately 18 years old. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all of his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. This summary kind of, it gives us this ending in verse 21, kind of shows us the longevity that Daniel had. He served until the first year of King Cyrus. They approximate that to be a 69 to 70 year period of time that he served in the courts of Babylon and served basically the royalty of that, of whatever time it was that he was there. He served at the pleasure of the current king. Most of us might have 40 to 50 years at a career. I mean, and who knows, some of us may not even settle on one thing. We may go through multiple careers through our lifetimes. Of course, normally we don't start at 15. We don't start at 15 or 18, as Daniel did. But it just shows the longevity that God blessed him with to be able to serve through all of those administrations. Let's move on to chapter 2. Let's see how we're doing on time. Chapter 2. We're presented with a challenge that Daniel was given. And with God's help, he was able to do something that none of the other wise men in Babel could do. Let's begin in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 1. I want to also note that I'm reading this chapter. I'm going to read from the Complete Jewish Bible, because just some of the wording I think is a little more clear. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar became so troubled by a series of dreams he had that he couldn't sleep. So the king ordered the magicians, the exorcists, sorcerers, and astrologers summoned to interpret the king's dreams to him. They came and stood in his presence. We're not told that Daniel was brought, so perhaps Daniel was still considered too junior, too new in the position he was in to be consulted. The king said to them, "I had a dream which will keep troubling my spirit until I know what it means." And some feel like he had even forgotten it, that he had had this dream and then forgotten what it was, but remembered enough to know that it was troubling. Now, I don't know if that's the case or whether he knew what the dream was, but he was testing his people to find out, how good are you guys really? Are you just going to make up something? So the astrologer spoke to the king in Aramaic, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king answered the astrologers, "Here's what I have decided. If you don't tell me both the dream and its interpretation, you will be torn limb from limb, and your houses reduced to rubble. But if you do state the dream and its interpretation, I will give you presents, rewards, and great honor. Just tell me the dream and its interpretation." Again, the job security in this city was not the greatest, was it? One day you could be just coasting along just fine, and the next day the king says, "You tell me what this is or else you're all dead." And they knew that he would come through on his promise. A second time, they said, so they were really getting desperate now, "Let his majesty tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it." This is what he didn't want, because he knew if he told them the dream, the interpretation would be whatever they thought the king wanted to hear. The king replied, "I see you're only trying to gain time, because you see that I have decided that if you don't tell me the dream there is only one sentence passed on all of you. So you've conspired to mislead me with lies in the hope that time will change things. Now just tell me the dream. That will convince me that you also will be able to give me its correct interpretation. So who knows what had happened before this, but somehow Nebuchadnezzar had probably a seed of doubt had begun to grow in his mind about all these people. And are they really giving me good advice? Well, this is a good way to find out. Tell me the dream and the interpretation, and I'll know you guys are really up to snuff. You're really doing a good job. The astrologers, verse 10, answered the king, "Your Majesty, nobody in the world can do this. Never has a king, no matter how great and powerful, asked such a thing of any magician or exorcist or astrologer. So this is unprecedented, Nebuchadnezzar. We can't understand how you can feel you can ask us this. No one has ever asked this of anybody. The king is asking a difficult thing. Nobody but the gods could tell this to your majesty, and they don't live with mere mortals." So now they're recognizing and admitting their limitations to Nebuchadnezzar. At this time, the king flew into a rage and ordered all the sages of Babel put to death. When the decree was published that the sages were to be slain, they sought Daniel and his companions in order to have them put to death. So this is the first time Daniel finds out what's happening. And he said to Arioch, "Since you are the king's official, let me ask, why has the king issued such a harsh decree?" Arioch explained the matter to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time to tell the king the interpretation. Daniel went home and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, so that they could ask the God of heaven for mercy concerning this secret, and thus save Daniel and his companions from dying along with the other sages of Babel. So they were included. They had the death sentence on them as well as everybody else. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a vision at night, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And in these words, "Blessed be the name of God from eternity past to eternity future, for wisdom and power are his alone. He brings the changes of seasons and times. He installs and deposes kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those with discernment. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what lies in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors, for giving me wisdom and power, and revealing to me what we wanted from you, for giving us the answer for the king." So Daniel went to see Arioch, whom the king had charged with destroying the sages of Babel, and said to him, "Don't destroy the sages of Babel. Bring me before the king, and I will give the king the interpretation." Quickly, Arioch brought Daniel before the king and told him, "I have found one of the exiles of Judah who will reveal the interpretation to his majesty." The king said to Daniel, who had been renamed Belteshazzar, "Can you tell me what I dreamt and what it means?" Daniel answered the king. Notice what he says. "No sage, exorcist, magician, or astrologer can tell his majesty the secret he is asked about. Nobody can do this. In a sense, there's nothing special about me. There's nothing special about Daniel." And he goes on to say, "But there is a God in heaven who unlocks mysteries, and he has revealed to King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the latter days. Here are your dream and the visions you had in your head when you were in bed. Your majesty, when you were in bed, you began thinking about what would take place in the future. And he who reveals secrets has revealed to you what will happen. Yet this secret has not been revealed to me, because I am wiser than anyone, but so that the meaning can be made known to your majesty, and then you can understand the thoughts of your own mind." Again, he points out, there's nothing special about me. This is from God. God has given you this dream, and he's given me the interpretation. So then Daniel goes on and explains the vision. And we know this is the one where we have the head of gold, the chest of silver, the large statue. And then, in a sense, we have Daniel at this in this interpretation, in this speech that he gives to Nebuchadnezzar, preaching the gospel to King Nebuchadnezzar. Let's drop down to verse 44 of this chapter 2. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will establish a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not pass into the hands of another people. It will break to pieces and consume all those kingdoms, but it itself will stand forever. Like the stone you saw, which without human hands separated itself from the mountain and broke to pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great God has revealed to the king what will come about in the future. The dream is true, and its interpretation is reliable. And it says after this point that King Nebuchadnezzar actually worshiped Daniel, had him present an offering in his behalf. And then Daniel was given a very high position in the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar, and he was able to bring his three companions into service as well. So imagine the good they were able to do because God placed Daniel in this position and gave him the interpretation of that dream. Well, let's look at some of the lessons we just talked about here. We're going to stop at this point. There's many more things we could talk about, and if you want to go and read the rest of Daniel, that would be worthwhile for you. But some of the lessons, we see that Daniel's resolve to stay pure in spite of being surrounded by decadence, paganism, and sin. Daniel obeyed and trusted in God in the face of tremendous pressure, not only as a young man, but later in life also. God can and will use young people to be an example and perhaps even just to display a kingdom message to others around them. I know sometimes we can look at our younger people and think, oh, they need more time before they can really do something. No, that's not the case. God can use younger people, and he shows us in these stories that he does. God will place people in a position, many cases, to help other people, as he did with Joseph, as he did with Daniel. Just as Daniel successfully resisted incredible pressure to compromise his faith in the midst of a hostile culture that presented numerous temptations and threats, we too are faced with similar trials in the world around us. We live in what many have called a spiritual Babylon. We may not have the constant threat of a sword over our heads, but we have the constant threat of this world, its temptations, Satan and his demons, who are on the hunt for us. We must stand for our beliefs and obey our Father in heaven, knowing that just as God helped Daniel as a youth and an old man, he will help us, whether we are young or old.